following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
Since March 2007, one online audio production group has pushed the boundaries.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents Maudlin.
It's Sounding Board. Audio drama with Lumpy Bits.
You have been listening to Jake Sanson.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents
My Name is Feedback, and these are my stories.
Last time on Gaia's Voyages.
This is the Broken Sea Audio production of Escape from New York.
OTR Swagcast.
Doctor Who, starring Mark Kalita as the Doctor.
BrokenSea.com. New audio every Thursday.
8 Timber, because Timber's still in Serenity. I buried him there.
What do you mean, you buried him?
Well, I pulled this gun, and I put a hole in his head.
Sarge, you didn't bury me.
Lana Minx, prepare to be boarded. Things check out, we won't be staying long. Boys?
Oh!
Greetings, traveler. I am Initiative the 10th Order, Lamangelo.
Now move, Shepard. I don't know how long we have before things start going all to hell.
I am afraid, Captain, it is far too late for that. Look who I've discovered.
Hi.
Would you please stop shooting at us?
Well, that didn't work. Anyone else have a plan?
Now, it don't need to go this way. I ain't been right more times than I've been alive. But I aim to do right a fraction more, when it counts.
Firefly, Old Wounds.
Hello, this is Alan Tudyk.
And this is Nathan Fillion.
Saying hello to the Sonic Society.
If you're not listening to the Sonic Society, what are you doing?
You're dead like Wash, that's what.
Please join us each week at the Sonic Society.
You can find us at sonicsociety.org or at any of the major directories like the Podcast Pickle or iTunes. Join us, won't you?
And when you come, bring a friend.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swagcast. Tonight's Voodoo Voodoo Night. Yes, Tales of Voodoo. Gotta love that. Anyway, we have two Tales of Voodoo this night with two episodes of Escape, Papa Benjamin and the Running Man, as well as CBS Radio Mystery Theater House of the Voodoo Queen. Not to mention a new Avengers serial entitled The Joker, and a bit of jealousy rears its head on Flash Gordon. Hope you enjoy. Now where'd I put that chicken?
Currently in downtown Portland, still 54 degrees at KOIN. The time is 11:08. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater is now.
K-O-I-N.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents Come In. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Voodoo is a word to conjure with. And conjure is the right word, because the high priest of voodooism was called a conjure man. It was he to whom the practitioners of voodoo turned when they wanted spells cast or lifted, enemies punished, or love affairs promoted. As voodoo spread northward from the island of Haiti to the Americas, and particularly to New Orleans, it should be noted that its most powerful conjurers were women.
Dambalaudeo, all-powerful one, see your knife, the sacred knife of our ancient god, see Dambala. The knife has drawn blood, and you, Dambala, you will now have another soul. Oh, Dambala, look with mercy and kindness upon this servant who will continue to serve you faithfully, now and forever.
Our mystery drama, The House of the Voodoo Queen, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars Jordan Charney and Joan Loring. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
If you take a look at the 1975 cars, you'll notice a European influence. And there are some new American cars that rival the Europeans, one being Buick's new Skylark SR, with its touring car interior and spirited little V6 engine. But don't think of the Skylark SR as a European tourer. We're proud of the fact that it's a Buick. You will be too.
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
In God We Trust, America Speaks.
George Washington remarked during the Constitutional Convention, "Let us raise a standard to which the wise and honest can repair. The event is in the hands of God."
Presented by the Catholic Communications Foundation.
Who knows how to help you solve your shopping problems? Your Better Business Bureau.
I'm going to rent this apartment, but now the landlord wants a deposit equal to 2 months' rent to cover damage. I wonder if there's anything I should do to protect myself.
There certainly is, Lou.
Who are you?
I'm the man from the Better Business Bureau. Deposits are usual, but before you move into that apartment, go through it thoroughly and list any and all damage. Prepare this list in duplicate and have your landlord sign both copies. And before you sign that lease, find out what sort of repairs you will be responsible for and which are to be paid for by the landlord.
Then, when you move, this list helps you to solve the mystery of who's to pay for what, right?
Right.
All of us have pictured in our imagination the perfect dream house. The castle in Spain, or the little cottage on the mountaintop overlooking that blue lake in the green valley. But few of us are ever fortunate enough to have our dream come true. Douglas and Helen Fenton were two young people who had that good fortune. And as we first meet them, they're having the happy experience of being shown through their perfect house in New Orleans, which they've acquired through the death of an uncle Douglas Fenton never knew existed.
And this was used as a music room in the old days.
Oh, I can just see it. Can't you, Doug?
It's a beautiful room. Nice and sunny.
I think I have given you a thorough tour of your new home. And unless you have any questions, I should be getting back to the office.
I promise you'll be our first dinner guest. Won't he, Doug?
Oh, you bet. There are still a lot of questions I have about Uncle Timmy that I'll want answered.
I am at your service. Good day, and good luck, and good health. Hey, don't bother, Mr. Fenton. I know the way out.
Oh, Doug, I'm so happy. I just love this house. Wait till you see what I do with it. What was that?
The movers?
Don't be silly, darling. They left hours ago. Remember?
Probably something fell.
It sounded like something falling.
Thank you.
glad you're home.
How did it go today, darling? Any better?
I really can't tell you, Doug, because I'm so ashamed. But I didn't stay home. I guess I'm just a big coward.
Oh, don't be silly. Anyone would be frightened by what goes on in this place.
Doug, what are we going to do?
I told you. Sell the house and find another.
Did you reach Mr. Lamour's?
No luck. When I called, he was out. And when he called me back, I was in a meeting and couldn't take the call, but he promised to... Oh, that must be him now. Hello?
Mr. Fenton? Lamour's here. Sorry we missed connections all day. What can I do for you?
Mr. Lamour's, I don't know how to tell you this, but... Well, Helen and I think the house is haunted.
If you don't like the house, you can always put it on the market.
We love the house. That is, we thought we loved it. Well, you can't live in a house where all night long you hear screams and chain rattlings and during the day thumpings and... Well, there's an odor, an indescribable odor of rot and decay that sweeps through the house from time to time. It's here now, as a matter of fact. And we wanted to know if you had had any complaints...
The house has been empty for years.
Well, maybe that's the reason. Have you heard anything that... Well, about the house being haunted?
You're serious?
Of course.
Then I can only tell you that feeling the way you do, you shouldn't stay in the house. I'll give you the names of some real estate agents who might be willing to handle it.
Have a seat, Mrs. Fenton. Tell me how I can help you.
Well, we have a house we'd like to put on the market.
Well, of course. Would you give me the location?
It's in an old neighborhood. 66 Delacorte Street.
Yes, I know the house. I thought it was vacant.
Well, we just moved in. My husband's uncle left in the house, and we decided to move to New Orleans and live here.
Miss Fenton, I'll be honest with you. The house has a bad reputation.
I don't understand.
I think you do. Any honest real estate agent would have to warn a prospective buyer that there are definite problems connected with your house.
Of course. I understand that.
Well, then you also understand I'd have to offer the house way below the market value.
How far below?
I don't think I could ask more than
$20,000. $20,000? My husband and I wouldn't be interested at that figure. Thank you for your time.
Oh, not at all. If you change your mind, you know where to find me.
Now, how can a pretty girl look so unhappy after a dinner like this?
When the girl is thinking of going home to a house that scares her and that no real estate agent wants to handle.
Relax. Look, we'll put an ad in all the papers and sell it ourselves. You know, it might be better that way. We save a commission.
Oh, darling, That's why I love you. You take such a big load off my shoulders and make everything seem so easy.
Well, isn't that what husbands are for?
Mm-hmm. I can think of a few other uses.
And that's one reason why I love you.
When are we going to put the ads in?
First thing tomorrow.
Doug, did you leave a faucet on?
What?
The water. Don't you hear it?
Yes. Yes, I hear it. Did you check the bathroom?
I was afraid to. Anyway, it certainly doesn't sound as if it's coming from the bathroom.
No. No, it seems to be right over the bed.
I can't stand it, Doug. Can't you do something?
I don't know what... Tell it to go away, whatever it is. Do you think that would work?
You should call the police.
Oh, I would. I would if I felt they could help. Whatever it is hasn't hurt us, only annoyed us. So I think maybe if we show we're not bothered, the noises and the smells will stop.
I don't think I can do that, Doug.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's why we put the ads in the papers.
Doug, hold me. Hold me close. What's that?
Well, if it's ghosts, they've come to the front door.
But who could come at this time of night?
Oh, you talk as if it were 3 a.m. It's only 10:30, and this is a late town. Well, I suppose I'd better see who it is.
I'll come with you.
Be right with you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I never dreamed I'd be waking you. I'll come back some other time. Oh, no. We weren't asleep. Come on in. Come in. Well, it was the advertisement in the Picayune. The house is for sale. Oh, yes, it is.
I'm Doug Fenton, and this is my wife, Helen.
I'm Zoe LeMay. You're interested in the house? I am.
Are you married?
No. I'm quite alone.
But this is a large house. The ad described how many...
Darling, I'm sure Miss Lemaitre knows how large the house is. She's interested. I know the house is large, but I'm hooked on antiquities. I think before we actually get down to business, I should tell you. I know all about the reputation this house has in this city. You do? I do.
And you still want to buy it?
If I can afford it. And I think that the only way you're going to dispose of it is to sell it very cheaply.
Miss Lemaitre, just how cheaply are you thinking? Or aren't you prepared to make an offer?
Oh, I'm not only prepared. I brought this certified check along.
You've made up your mind.
Here it is.
Oh, wow.
Massey? $7,800? Why, that's just a fair offer, considering the reputation of the house. Doug Fenton?
Miss Lemaitre?
Are you too angry with me to join me in a café suite?
It's my wife who's angry.
Oh.
I never can stay mad at girls as pretty as you.
Thank you. Do you find me fascinating, Mr. Fenton?
Completely. I trust I have the same effect on you.
Oh. It's not you who interests me. It's your house.
Why?
I can't tell you.
Everyone in this town seems to know what's wrong with my house, except Helen and me.
They know there's something wrong. That's all they know.
Oh, and you know more, beautiful Zoe. Hmm? Ah, yes. Behind those beautiful green eyes lies secrets.
And your attitude is one reason why I can't tell you. You wouldn't believe me anyway.
Try me.
All right. The house you're living in doesn't really belong to you.
Oh, I have a deed that says it does.
That house was stolen from the daughter of Marie Laveau.
Marie Laveau? Who's she?
The most powerful Bokor in the history of voodoo. The beautiful black woman who ruled as the voodoo queen of New Orleans for half a century. You, Douglas Fenton, are living in the house of the voodoo queen. And she wants you out.
When a landlord wants to evict a tenant, the tenant can always take his case to court. But when the fanciful notion is advanced that the landlord is really a voodoo queen who lived back in the 19th century, that tenant has a problem. I'll be back shortly with a terrifying solution found by Doug Fenton in Act Two. Voodoo is an African religion which has been variously described and downgraded by such descriptive phrases as black magic, mumbo jumbo, or a mess of meaningless ritualistic incantations practiced and believed in only by the ignorant and superstitious. Nevertheless, it survives. Douglas Fenton has been told that voodoo presents a very real and serious threat to his living in a house he inherited in New Orleans. But Douglas Fenton is a skeptic.
You're too much, Zoe.
Oh?
But you must really think I'm the biggest sucker you ever saw if you expect me to sell you a $60,000 house for $7,800 because of some crazy story about a voodoo queen. Wait, where are you going?
Before I called you ignorant, now I know you're a fool. And I don't like fools.
Sit down.
Go home, Douglas. Go home to your pretty, silly wife. And the two of you can sit and laugh at Marie Laveau. But in the night when your blood runs cold and a nameless terror shakes your bones, remember me. And if you can, remember to call on the cochonnerie and pray they show you mercy.
Hey, you think this stuff is for real, don't you?
I was born in New Orleans, as were my mother and grandmother. We know the power of the cochonnerie.
If I apologize, would you sit down?
I will sit. But it's useless. You will still disbelieve.
Can you blame me? I'm a product of the 20th century. You tell me a pretty wild story and mention things I've never even heard of. Like this cochonnerie.
The cochonnerie are an ancient society of voodoo priests.
And what's your connection with them?
They asked me for a favor. It's not wise to oppose them.
And the favor was to buy my house. Well, why? Why do they want it?
Because it was the home of Marie Laveau. Because it really belongs to her, and they want it as a shrine. And their headquarters. What are you doing at this cafe this afternoon? What took you out of your office?
Oh, a problem. I've always found that a walk and some fresh air helps me.
Huh. Don't you find it strange that your walk should lead to the back streets? And this particular cafe?
I wanted to get away from crowds.
And how was it that I happened to be here?
Well, you can answer that better than I.
Yes, I can. Read this note. I received it at noon.
Cafe Lafitte, 3:30. Fenton will be there. Oh. Helen? Helen, darling? Helen, what's the matter?
Oh, Doc. Oh, at your home. Look there on the floor.
What the devil is it?
What does it look like?
Like a chicken that has had its neck blown.
That's what it is. I found it on our doorstep. Along with the chicken, I found this.
This looks like a child's drawing of some kind of snake.
Not a child, Doug. Not a child. According to the police, these are voodoo symbols. Have you ever heard of voodoo?
Strange that you should mention that. I had a crash course earlier today.
What?
The girl who came here to buy our house. I ran into her today at a sidewalk cafe. She seemed to know a lot about it. She told me...
Yes?
No, it's not important. What did the police say?
Well, these were voodoo symbols that... They may be the work of a prankster, or it might be a believer. Someone who thinks voodoo magic actually works. Someone with a grudge against us.
The cochonnerie. I hope I find you here.
Why, Mr. Fenton, what a surprise.
Now, look, don't try to put me on. You probably have a piece of paper on you somewhere that reads Café Lafitte, 822. Fenton will be there.
You're really rather charming, you know, Doc.
I try. Particularly when someone looks like you. You know, I've never met a girl who even came close to you in looks. I think you've bewitched me.
Of course. But what have you done to me? Put a love spell on me?
I think you're trying to tell me something.
And if I am?
We should find a more private place.
I shouldn't tell you this. Oh, Doug, darling, I never felt like this before in my life. Never with anyone.
Oh, you're a beautiful liar. But I love to hear it.
I mean it, Doug.
Oh, you're an astonishing girl. Really? We've been here for 2 hours, and you've never once mentioned my wife.
Oh. Should I have?
Well, let's just say it's, unusual.
Oh. You're an experienced adulterer.
Ouch. Now, why did I bring her name up?
I don't know.
I do. It's because I'm worried about the things she finds on our doorstep.
What sort of things?
Well, a chicken with its neck wrung. A piece of cardboard with a crudely drawn snake. Oh, yes, that means something to you, doesn't it?
Spells. They're put in or near people's houses for a purpose.
And they mean something.
Of course.
I'm almost afraid to ask.
You should be. The chicken with its neck wrung means death.
Helen? Helen, are you all right?
Yes, Doug, darling, I'm fine.
How was today? I mean,
Well, if you mean, were there any other little presents left on our doorstep? No.
Well, that's good news. Maybe they've stopped.
I won't complain. After all, you're home early tonight.
What does that mean?
Oh, nothing, really. It's just that you've been working so late at the office so often, and I realize that I'm not as attractive as I used to be, and although I guess I'm not much...
Yeah, I hate to hear you talk like that.
Oh, and I hate to talk like that. Maybe I wouldn't if...
If what?
I know how attractive you are, and there are a lot of beautiful women in the world, and...
Oh, please, this isn't necessary, Helen.
I'm afraid it's very necessary. Will you stop seeing Zoe Lemaitre?
I'm as mad as anyone can get and still not commit murder. It's your associates. Those voodoo priests you tell me are called the Cochon Gris.
They're not my associates. Sometimes they ask me to do favors for them, and I know it's not wise to refuse.
Oh, they must really be grateful to you. They've rewarded you by telling Helen every time we met.
Oh.
Now tell them to lay off.
I won't.
You won't? What do you want to do? Break us up?
You know better than that, Doug. It's just that I don't want to make a fool of myself. If I go to the Cochon Gris with this request, they will simply tell me what I've been telling you all along. If you wanted to stop, sell the house.
We would, gladly, if we could get anywhere near what it's worth.
What is it worth, really, Doug? You can't find a buyer who'll even make an offer except the Cochon Gris. And they think they're being very generous.
I won't be taken.
You inherited the house. Whatever you get is pure profit.
You really don't understand, do you?
I know that if you won't sell, then Helen will have to suffer.
Not if I stop seeing you.
That would be your choice.
And I'm making it. Right now. If you can let me walk away rather than ask a simple favor of people who owe you, then I'll walk.
Goodbye, my love.
Have I told you it's nice having you home for dinners again?
You have?
Oh, you're bored with me.
No. With myself. And you're going to have me home a lot more from now on.
That's very good news.
I'm not so sure about that. I've lost my job.
You're kidding.
I wish I were. But they called me in yesterday with all sorts of excuses about cutbacks and economies and... Well, I'm out. I was the last man in, and now I'm the first man out.
I'd sell the house and get out of New Orleans. Oh, Doug, don't you see? It will be wonderful. We'll be starting all over again.
Back.
So I see.
May I come in?
What happened to your key?
I threw it away so I wouldn't be tempted to use it. But I couldn't stay away.
I'm glad.
Did you miss me?
Oh, Doug.
Oh, Zoe, my love, my darling.
You don't know how much I missed hearing those words the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid you're going to miss them a lot more.
What?
I've lost my job, and Helen's at me to sell the house and get away from the city. And, incidentally, you.
Oh.
She no longer cares how little we get for it. She's completely fed up.
And you, Doug?
Well, it's very tough to put up a decent argument for staying.
If you could, would you stay?
How can I stay without money?
If it's money that separates us, you don't have to say goodbye at all.
Oh, excuse me, love. I didn't know I was talking to a wealthy plantation owner.
I only meant I might be able to get you all the money you want.
The only friends I know you have are the tightwad Cochon Gris, who only want to pay $7,800 for a $60,000 house.
They've been known to put a higher price on other things.
Like what?
Souls.
Oh. You know, you're really too much with that voodoo business. If there were anything to it, which you know I don't believe for a minute, I'd have to be crazy to be willing to sell my soul.
I didn't mention your soul, did I?
I can't sell what I don't own, and as far as I know, I only have one soul.
There are others you can pledge. Other souls you can speak for.
Would you care to put a name to that soul?
Anyone near and dear to you.
Like Helen.
She would be one.
Oh, I don't know whether to laugh or just walk out of here.
I've never hurt you,
Tom. I mean, just what kind of a man do you think I am?
A man I can love.
Love? That word sounds very strange on your lips. The same lips that can talk about me selling my wife's soul.
Oh, go away. You're just like everyone else, crying about not having any money and not willing to pay the price for getting all you want, everything you want, including me.
Helen, what are you doing?
Packing. You can't seem to make up your mind, so I'm making it up for you. I told Mr. Vincent, the real estate agent, to take whatever he can for the house, and we're getting out. Tonight. Oh, I've been expecting you. There's a café fit on the coffee table.
Well, how did you know I'd come back?
Because I chose you. I couldn't make a mistake about the man I chose to love.
Well, when you stop patting yourself on the back, I'd better tell you that the only reason I'm back is because I don't believe any of this voodoo stuff. And that's why I'm willing to go along.
Of course.
And to prove it, I'm not going to make any deal where I have to shoot, stab, poison, or in any way do anything that's going to cause physical harm to Helen.
No one's going to ask that of you. All that's required is this knife and your blood.
If you're in love with a beautiful girl who practices voodoo and believes that a drop of your blood drawn from you by a sacred knife will bring you luck, why not? And from there, it's just a short step to making deals about souls, yours, and even others. Because after all, it doesn't really work. Or does it? I'll be back in a moment with Act 3. I think all of us feel some small twinges of apprehension when we sit in the doctor's office waiting for the injection we know we must have. But how do you describe the feelings of a young man sitting opposite a girl he adores, who's wielding a ceremonial knife preparatory to drawing some blood?
Zoe, my love, you're beautiful and an enchantress. But somehow you look different with that knife in your hand. May I see it?
Be careful. It's very sharp.
And heavy.
It's pure gold.
I don't suppose you could use something smaller than this. It really looks lethal.
I could use a lot of different things, but then this paper would be meaningless.
Well, it's blank.
At the moment. It won't be, after you write your wife's name on it.
But before I do that, what am I supposed to get?
As much money as you need. Or want.
Oh, well, suppose I said I want $1,000,000.
The amount isn't important. Just trust me, and for 1 year, money will rain on your head in a golden shower.
And what happens after the year's up?
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
What have I got to lose?
Nothing. before you write your wife's name, you know, of course, what she is losing.
Yeah, I know. I'm pledging her immortal soul. How is she, Doctor?
I'm afraid I don't have very good news for you, Mr. Fenton.
Haven't you found out yet what's wrong?
The tests are inconclusive, and none of the medication we've been giving her seems to be able to help.
Well, what is it? Is it a bug or a virus?
What? We just don't know. She's been asking for you.
Helen? Helen? I'm here.
Oh, Doc. You didn't have any trouble getting away from the office?
I keep telling you, darling, I'm my own boss now. And if things keep going the way they are, I may even turn out to be a tycoon.
I'm dying, Doug.
Oh, Helen, please, now, you mustn't even...
It's all right. You mustn't feel badly. The way things went since we came to New Orleans, I'm beginning to think that death might be the best thing for me.
Helen, I don't want you to talk that way.
Doug, I want you to promise me one thing. Just one thing, please.
Anything.
When I die...
No, please, now, will you stop talking about dying?
Please, Doug, listen to me. You must get out of that house. Get rid of it. Promise me, Doug. You'll never set foot again in that horrible house. Oh, delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I do adore champagne.
Well, when are we going to make it all legal?
You mean with a wedding and everything like that?
Oh, and what a wedding. What a reception. And what a honeymoon. The biggest, most expensive...
Helen's been dead only 3 months. Not a very long period of mourning.
Who says?
A lot of people. Nasty, gossipy people.
Dull, stodgy people. Who cares about them?
Or what they say to your business associates.
What can they say?
That you became very rich very suddenly, that your wife died mysteriously, that I'm a witch, and that perhaps people should be careful about doing business with you.
Oh, yeah. I'd almost forgotten. It's all because of that voodoo group you fool around with, hmm?
You'll have to admit that everything happened after we went through the ceremony they told me to perform.
Right. I'll admit that first sugar deal on the commodities market was luck. But after that, give me a little credit. I got smart about commodities. And now I know what I'm doing. So, when do we get married?
Why is marriage so important to you?
You wouldn't be stalling me, would you, my love?
Don't be silly, Doc. Shouldn't you wait and see when your 1-year contract is up, that your luck doesn't change?
Come in, Lamour. Sit down.
Your offices are most impressive, Fenton. Most impressive.
You said that you wanted to see me on a matter of utmost urgency.
That's right. First, I owe you an apology.
For what?
For my cowardice.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The facts about your uncle's house, which I knew and withheld from you deliberately.
No. Forget it. I'm out of the house, and you have nothing to reproach yourself for.
I had heard you sold the house, and I also know the price. That suggested to me that you still had your reasons for...
I just didn't want the trouble of looking around for buyers. I grabbed the first offer I got.
From Miss Lemaitre?
Something wrong with that?
I will be brief. I didn't tell you and your wife the history of the house because I was afraid. Afraid of the cochonnerie. Afraid of the power of voodoo. Fenton, you're in danger.
Me?
Yes. How did your wife die?
Some unknown virus. Some kind of fluke, the doctor said.
Don't you think that's strange? An unknown disease in this day and age?
Look, Lamour, you can believe what you want, but leave me out.
I can't. Because of your relationship with Miss Lemaitre, I beg of you one favor. Tonight, come with me and meet Louis Gaston. It may be your only chance to save yourself.
I don't feel any need for salvation. Now, if you...
You've heard of Louis?
Never.
Louis Gaston is a 90-year-old Cajun who's lived all his life in the bayous. He knows more about voodoo than any other human being.
What are you doing?
Helping you out of my office, since you won't leave when I ask you to.
I'll gladly go. If you'll tell me you haven't let her talk you into making some kind of silly bargain.
Why did you say that?
So you have. You've sold your soul. Fenton, for the love of God, come with me to the bayou tonight. Lewis, this is Douglas Fenton.
I hope we meet in time, no?
I'm here only because Mr. Lemoore has practically kidnapped me.
Mr. Lemoore has lived in Louisiana a long time. He knows much about voodoo and Cajuns.
All right, all right. What do you have to tell me?
First, you tell me what you have done with the Bokor.
What the devil is a Bokor?
A very bad person. One who knows the darkest secrets of voodoo and uses them for evil ends. One who is pledged to Tambala Odeo, the great snake god.
Oh, this all sounds like something out of the Middle Ages.
No, Mr. Fenton. It is much older than that. Have you ever seen a knife like this?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I've seen a lot of knives.
But one like this you would remember, no? A pure gold knife. With these writings.
But what if I have?
If you have only seen it, Mr. Fenton, that is well. But if it has drawn your blood, that is very bad.
How come you know so much about all this voodoo ritual?
I had a wife. I loved her much, yes. She loved other things more. She sold my soul, Mr. Fenton. Sold my soul to Dambala Odeo. I found her just in time, and I defeated her and her Bokor. But I paid a price. I cannot use my limbs. You see, Mr. Fenton, I must sit here until the end. But Dambala Odeo and I, we will fight, you understand?
And that's why you brought me here, Lemoore, huh? Because you think I've fallen somehow under the spell of...
The Bokor Zoé Lemaître.
We are going to be married.
When?
We haven't set the date, but she has agreed to marry me.
She will not marry you. If, as I believe, she is Bokor, she will want to destroy you and take your soul. She will never marry.
I know you're wrong. Well, look, as long as I came here, what must I do if you're right?
She must follow the ritual for the sacrifice. She will ask you to perform some ancient marriage rite to strengthen the vows. It will be a powerful voodoo, and she will need a drug. And she will ask you to drink. If you drink, nothing can save you.
If she does ask me to go through the ceremony, is there anything I can do?
You can use this knife. I give it to you.
The gold knife?
It is easily concealed in your clothing, as you see. And you will use it.
But I thought you said that this knife could only be used by a Bokor.
Or on a Bokor.
Where were you last night, my love? You're not the only one who's jealous, you know.
You never have to worry about me. You should know by now that I'm yours, my love, for life. Zoe? Are we going to get married?
Of course.
When?
Whenever you like.
You mean that? You really mean that?
You set the date.
Today?
Oh, really, Doc? You've got to give a girl a chance to get
ready. All right. How about Saturday?
Saturday sounds lovely. There's just one silly favor I'd like to ask.
Oh, anything. What?
Before the real wedding, with the minister and everything. I know it's superstitious, but you know you're Zoe. I just wouldn't feel that we were truly married unless we went through a little native ceremony that my family has observed in every marriage.
A native ceremony?
It's nothing, really. Just the two of us before an ancient altar. I know you'll think it's nonsense, but it means so much to me. So much that I don't think I can marry you unless you go through with it.
This is my old house. Why do we have to come here?
Shh, don't ask so many questions. Just pretend we're playing some childish game. It will seem that way to you, Doug, but to me it's... Well, the way we've always done things.
What's that?
The altar.
But that statue, it's...
He looks frightening, but it's just an old statue of the snake god that blesses every marriage.
Zoe, please. You know I don't believe all this.
Oh.
Maybe you're used to the darkness and the candles and the drums, but...
Here, drink this and you'll feel better.
What's that?
A little ceremonial wine, darling. It was left on the altar for us. Drink it.
Do you really want me to drink from that goblet?
Yes.
You insist?
Darling, it's the only way. You will drink for me.
If you come into my arms and hold the goblet to my lips.
Now who's acting childishly?
It's the only way.
All right. Here, dearest. Drink. You're holding me too tight. Doug, the knife. No. Doug, help me.
I drank, my love. And now we'll be together always. Just the way you wanted it.
A friend of mine told me the story of an investigative reporter who penetrated some real voodoo ceremonies and photographed the strictly forbidden rites. The pictures somehow were ruined in development, and the journalist developed an unfortunate tic. His right hand, the hand that operates a camera, now moves ceaselessly in the air, completely out of control. The doctors diagnose it as a nervous disorder. But of course, they don't practice voodoo. I'll be back in a moment. It's amazing how many of us invest inanimate objects with supernatural powers. On the other hand, perhaps our superstitions are only faint memory traces, throwbacks to our ancestors who prayed to rocks and trees and mountains. Today, we've progressed beyond those beliefs. We're sure that inanimate objects are powerless. On the other hand, we're told that nothing is sure except death and taxes. And, of course, the fact I'll be here tomorrow. Our cast included Joan Loring, Jordan Charney, Rene Roy, Dan Ockel, and Gilbert Mack. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are making your way, fearful and alone, through the dark Caribbean night. While ahead of you, arms held out to you, stands the most beautiful girl you've ever seen, and the most evil.
Listen now as Escape brings you Herb Purdom's terrifying story, The Running Man. It was hot in Taylor that night when it began. The little Honduran banana port simmered and stewed in a sticky heat that made your bones soft and your skin wet. Even Chatto's casino wasn't much relief. The usual handful of Chapinis and Caribs crowded around Chatto's warped and tired roulette table, while above, the big ceiling fan slowly churned up the warm, smoky air.
All right, little ball. Come back in that number four.
Numero cuatro, senores. Rojo. You win again, Captain Markham.
That's the way I like it.
You've got it, Markham, all of it.
My lucky night, lad. Yours will come.
Not me. I don't have lucky nights. That's so much.
Es verdad, señor Owen. Lo siento mucho.
Yeah. I'm sorry, too.
I was hoping you would not be coming to see me tonight, Owen.
It's a monotonous world, Chatto. Every night you sit there on your stool playing that mandolin and watching me lose money. Every night I lose it and come to you to borrow it back. It's a pretty dull circle.
For you? Que lastima.
I don't want pity, just money. 500 lempiras.
Ah, yes.
Well, come on, let's have it.
You're in a hurry, Owen. Always in a hurry.
I like to get places fast.
I know, but I think maybe you're running so fast you miss what you are passing.
Thanks for the philosophy, but I need the money more. What's the matter? My credit no good?
You owe me 4,000 already, Owen.
So? My plantation's worth 10 times that.
Plantations I don't want. Just money.
Okay, forget it. I'll just have to sell some more bananas. Good night, Chatto.
Buenas noches, amigo.
Good evening, Owen.
Hello, Mr. Loomis. Mind if I sit down? Hey, you lose again tonight, Owen? Chatto ought to oil his swing. We've been asking him to do that for 15 years. Yeah, always the same answer. Mañana. Tomorrow he'll do it.
He's a Carib. He's happy.
And the swing still squeaks.
Mm-hmm. Hey, look, Owen. The socks are nearly half finished. They'll be ready by Christmas.
Christmas?
That's slow work.
You spent months knitting me a pair of socks you could buy for $5.
I like to knit. Gives me time to meditate.
Is that the same reason you stay in this hole? You've been a big man for the American Fruit Company 20 years. You must have enough to get out of Honduras.
Yes, Owen, I have enough money to retire. More than enough, I guess. But it's not just a job. Taylor's my home, as it will become yours.
Oh, no. Somehow I'm going to make enough money to pull out of here.
You'll change your mind. You're young and patient with life.
At least I get things done.
It's true. In 3 years, you've built up a fine plantation. You work hard, Owen. But you also throw a great deal away on Chatto's wheel trying to get rich in a hurry.
Well, if you don't mind, sir, no lectures tonight. When can I start shipping?
Well, what's your deadline?
I've got an order for 3,000 stems of Baltimore cut due there in 60 days. Yeah,
company boat will be here in 3 weeks.
I'll make space for your load. Thanks.
Owen.
Hmm?
You went broke inside?
Yeah.
Borrow?
Yeah.
You need some money to pay your field hands. Tell him to see my paymaster. He'll advance it.
Mr. Loomis, I don't know what to say. It just seems you're always helping me.
Well, it's my pleasure, Owen. Perhaps someday you'll take over my place with the company. That would make an old man very happy.
It would make a young man happy, too. Good night, sir.
One thing more.
Yes?
A word of advice, Owen, about Selena. Stay away from her.
Why? Because of all the talk about her?
She's a bad one, Owen. A devil. Even her own people are afraid of her.
But I'm not a Carib. And speaking of the devil, I've got a date with her down at the beach. Look, sir. You don't believe in voodoo, do you?
Not exactly, but I respect it.
But I don't, sir. And Selena's the prettiest girl around here.
Yeah, she's beautiful, yes. But sooner or later, you'll find out we really are speaking of the devil. When I got to the beach, it seemed empty except for a few sleeping gulls. Then I saw her coming towards me in the brilliant moonlight. Selena walked like a cat on parade, her body swaying in unconscious rhythm, her long black hair flowing loose and glistening over her bare shoulders. Swimming or talking or just lying quietly beside me on the warm white sand, Selena was a wonderful antidote for loneliness.
Point, you are happy with me, yes?
Sure, Selena. Sure I am.
Then why you look at me so funny tonight?
I didn't realize I had.
But Senor Loomis, he tell you bad things about me, no?
Forget it.
You know I am not wicked, like they say.
Sure, I know. But others don't. I'm tired of defending you. You've just got to stop playing around with voodoo, Selena, that's all.
I understand. I will let nothing come between us all. Nothing.
Selena.
Boy. Now you're not pay attention to what stupid people say about me. Will you?
No, Selena. Of course not. Hello, the house. Anybody home?
Here on the porch.
Glad you came. I got a surprise for you.
Surprise?
How'd the loading go? Same as always. Ship's pulling out now.
What's this surprise? My socks finished ahead of time?
Oh, no. This is far more important than my knitting. Come inside. Well, you're certainly being mysterious about it. What is it? Oh.
You must be Owen. I'm Betty Stannard.
Betty's a daughter of a friend of mine, Owen. Yeah, and as a tourista, she'll need showing around the island.
Oh, but
Betty hardly needs some showing around, Owen.
Well, of course she does, and I'm the one to do it.
But you don't understand. She is...
All right. We'll let her decide. How about it, Miss Stannard?
Well, you're rather impetuous, aren't you?
You should see him when he's gambling. Well, Miss Stannard, what's the verdict? Can I be your guide?
Well, since you insist that I need one, I'll be delighted.
Now traveled on Taylor's One Railroad. 56 miles of it belongs to the American Fruit Company, but those last 4 miles are all ours.
Oh, and so impressive. Even from the maintenance car.
There's our house.
Your house? I'm only a turista, remember?
But if you stay, you'll be a chapine.
I think I'd rather be a turista.
What? Give up a chance at this wonderful life of tropical skies and red bananas.
And chiggers and scorpions and zopos and mosquitoes.
Huh?
And sopalotes and paludismo.
Oh, wait. Stop.
Something wrong?
What is wrong? I've spent 3 days showing you the sights of Taylor and the banana plantations, but I never said anything about black buzzards or malaria. Where'd you learn all that?
Here. I was raised in Taylor.
No.
Oh, good money carrying bananas for my boyfriend.
Boyfriend?
He was 12. I was 10. He cut the stems, and I'd carry them on my head.
Never mind. I know the procedure.
Well, are you going to show me your house and the rest of your plantation?
So you can make more fun of me?
You were the one who insisted I needed a guide.
You and Loomis must have had quite a laugh.
Well, I admit it started out as a joke.
Yes?
Well, I've spent every day with you since I came here. That's a lot of time to waste on a joke.
Perhaps you mean it's a lot of time to waste on me.
It wasn't wasted on me.
Betty, I owe you an apology.
Owen?
With me, it started as a kind of a game, too, but
Now it's changed. In 3 days, it's changed.
Changed for me, too.
Then you...
Yes, Owen.
Oh, Betty.
You know, wait. Before you say anything, Owen, there's one thing in the settle. You're gambling.
Oh? What about it?
You must quit, Owen, completely.
You're serious?
I've never been more so. Will you do it for me?
Well, with my bad luck, I guess it won't be too hard to quit.
Promise me, Owen.
All right, you have my word on it.
Good. And now go on about the tropical skies and red bananas.
Lumpopos and all.
Lumpopos and all. What was that?
I don't know. Came from those trees there. Near my house.
Sounded vicious somehow.
Probably just a wild cat. I think I'd better take you home, Betty.
Owen, that wasn't a wild cat.
Let's not talk about it. There's nothing to worry about, Betty. Nothing. It was dark when I got back to my house and found the Carib servants gone. The reason was in the living room. In the flickering light of 7 small candles lay what was left of 3 white chickens, ripped apart in a fury of feathers and bones. But it was the blood that made the scene one of utter horror. Dark, glistening blood. And crouching in the candlelight was Selena. When she lifted her head, I saw her eyes. They were dark fires of hate now. And she was no longer beautiful, but something incredibly evil. Selena, why are you here? Why did you do this?
Porque gods and devils love and hate, but no one knows why. Why?
Get out, Selena. Get out and take this voodoo junk with you.
I will go. See. But you will come to me, Owen. You will come.
Never.
You will come, for you are cursed tonight. I have put the curse of fortune on you, Owen.
The what?
From now on, you will never be able to lose. My wedding gift, sweetheart.
We will return to Escape and tonight's story, The Running Man, in just a moment. Univac, the magic electronic computer that adds up figures faster than people can think, will be on the job election night along with CBS Radio's top newsmen. Don't miss the special election returns broadcast at 6:15 p.m. New York time. And make CBS Radio your election headquarters on election night starting at 8 p.m. New York time. And now, back to Escape.
Never be able to lose a bet.
Believe it? No, of course I didn't believe it. A voodoo curse by a hysterical Carib girl? Who would? But I found myself thinking about it, wondering what it would be like never to lose a bet. And I kept thinking about it. About all the wealth it could bring, the freedom, the chance to get out of Taylor. And finally, I decided to test it. At least then I could forget the whole ridiculous business.
Oh, my. This last batch of yarn is certainly inferior. It's time today it's broken.
Mr. Loomis, do you have a deck of cards here?
Yes, I think I do.
Where? Where are they?
Well, let's see. Oh, yes, in that drawer there.
I don't see. Oh, yes, here they are.
Oh, good. You going to play some rummy with Betty?
I always liked that game. Would you cut cards with me, sir? What's that? Oh, now, Owen, you know that I don't gamble.
For a penny.
That's all, just a penny. Go ahead.
Oh, very well.
There. Queen of clubs. Now, my... King. I win. Try again. Nine. Jack. Again. Keep cutting. Six of hearts. Eight of hearts. Again, again.
Oh, Owen, isn't this a little bit
serious? No, please. All right. King. Yeah, try and beat that. Ace.
Well, you are in luck today.
I can't lose. Do you understand? I can't lose. The curse is working.
Curse? Oh, darling, that sounds like voodoo.
Voodoo? Maybe. I just don't know, but I just won four times in a row.
Owen, what are you talking about? Is something the matter?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out right now.
Owen!
Shadow, I've got to play the wheel.
Too early, amigo. Later.
Now, Shadow, now.
So much impatience, my friend. The croupier is not here. No one is here but me.
Well, then you run the wheel.
Me? But I'm the owner. It's not proper that I run my
wheel. Proper? Who cares if it's proper?
I do. Come back later and you can
you
play.
You don't hear well. I want to play that wheel now, Primitivo. Oh.
Primitivo? You're giving me much insult, senor. An apology would save me the trouble of having to kill you.
I'm sorry, Shadow. That was a stupid thing for me to do. Here. I hope I didn't break it.
Well, it is all right.
I lost my head.
You lost the frame.
I said I was sorry.
See,
I'll come back later.
My casino is open to the public, senor.
Look, Chad, I didn't mean that crack about Primitivo.
Adios, senor.
But I... Adios.
Followed you here, Owen.
What?
Aren't you forgetting something?
I don't understand, Betty.
A promise you made to me.
Oh, of course, but this won't be gambling, Betty.
No, then what will it be?
You don't understand. I've got a curse on me. I've got to find out if it works.
And if it does?
Then I'll be rich. I can't lose.
You can lose me, Owen. And if you break your promise about gambling, you will.
Betty, wait. Betty, please try and understand what... Oh, for the Lord.
Owen, you're a fool.
Captain Markham.
You're taking a big risk with that girl. She means what she says.
She'll get over it. She's just worried that I'll gamble away the plantation or something. She doesn't understand about...
About the voodoo curse of Selena?
How did you know about that?
If I told you all I know about Selena, it would turn your stomach inside out. She's pure evil, lad. I learned that 10 years ago. The curse will destroy you.
The curse of winning? That's a nice way to be destroyed.
There's no nice way to lose your soul.
Just what is it you know about Selena?
Nothing you'd believe now. But I know she wants you and she may get you. And if that happens, may God have mercy on you, because she won't.
Well, I was warned, but it didn't matter then. All I could think about was the way I'd won cutting cards with Mr. Loomis. The curse seemed to be working. Maybe I was a man who couldn't lose. And that night in Shadow's Casino, I found out.
Numero siete, señores. Rojo. You win again, señor Owen. Mm-hmm.
10 times. 20 times. I won. In half an hour, I had won nearly 4,000 lempiras.
Numero 16. You cannot lose tonight, Senor Owen.
Oh, not just tonight, Tomas. I can't lose, period. And to prove it, I'm going to break the bank right now.
The whole works. A number one.
You're pressing your fortune, senor.
At 35 to 1, I'm pressing your fortune, Chato. When that ball drops, I'll own this place. I've got Salida's curse on me, Chato. I can't lose.
Alto.
Hey, what's the idea of stopping the wheel?
The game is close, senor.
But, well, you can't do that.
I've done it, senor.
Afraid it's Selena's curse?
You call me primitivo. That gives me the right to have a savage superstition.
Chato, please. Please, give me a chance. This is the only place in Taylor to gamble. And I have...
Senor, you are unwelcome here. My game is close to you permanently. Leave the chips on the table and your debt to me is canceled.
But... All right. All right, I'll get out of here. I'll get out of Taylor. There are plenty of places in the world where I can play, and not for Lempiras either.
So, Owen is gambling at the casino.
And winning. Selena has him bewitched right enough.
Isn't there a way we can stop this?
Well, lass, it depends on Owen. If he has the will to stop gambling, yes. But if he doesn't...
Owen!
Mr. Loomis... Will you buy my plantation?
But why?
Oh, and you don't mean that. You can have it at a bargain. It's worth $20,000. I'll sell it to you for $10,000.
No. Oh, and you work for 3 years.
Betty, I can run that $10,000 into millions. Don't you understand? But not here. I've got to go where the money is. Monte Carlo, Deauville.
No, I will not let you do this.
You won't? Well, you're taking a lot on yourself, Mr. Loomis.
Haven't I always, Owen? You're like my own son. You know that. I can't let you throw away your life on this crazy...
I'm tired of having everyone tell me what to do. All I want to know is what you'll give me for my plantation. Name your price.
Nothing.
Nothing? Betty, talk to him. This is our chance to be rich. I can make enough for all of us, but I need a stake.
You have enough money now, Owen. If you don't throw it away...
Throw it away? I'm going to turn it into a fortune. You call that throwing it away?
You don't get anything for nothing, Owen.
But I tell you, I can't lose. The curse works. I've tried it.
Even if it works and you can't lose, it's still a curse, lad. There's no happy
Shut up! Shut up! I won't listen to any more of this sanctimonious drivel. Mr. Loomis, give me $5,000.
No, not 5 cents, Owen.
But you've got to. There's no one else.
All right, now, listen to me. I'll give you $20,000 for your plantation.
Well, that's more like it.
On the condition that you stay here in Taylor for 6 months to think it over.
6 months?
Yes. And if you still want to leave,
why, you're out of your mind. I'm leaving on the next boat, and you can't stop me.
I can. I'm a big man in Taylor, remember? Before you get your clearances from all the ministries and the national police, I can have you wrapped up in so much red tape you'll never get away.
It won't work.
It will work. And for your sake, I'm going to make arrangements tonight. Now.
No. No, you can't do this to me.
I'm doing it for you, Owen. That's the difference.
No, I won't let you do it.
Now, let me pass.
I said no. Get back.
All right.
Oh. Mr. Loomis.
I'm sorry.
No.
Lass, what is it? Oh.
What's the matter? Is he hurt?
He's dead.
Just a little push, that's all. But when Markham lifted the old man, I could see he'd fallen on the needles with which he was knitting. The needles were buried in his back, and now blood was dripping from them onto the socks he'd been knitting for me.
You killed him. He was trying to help you, and you killed him.
No, it was an accident. I didn't mean...
Didn't you?
I only pushed him.
I think I'd better get the police.
Markham, wait. Betty, you know I didn't mean to hurt him. You know that, Betty.
Don't touch me.
But please, listen. I love you.
Get away from me. I don't want your love. Just leave me alone.
What? She even let me explain.
Explain to the police, Alan.
Police? No. Markham, I've got to stop him. Markham! Markham, stop! Markham, please. Please help me. They'll hang me.
They sure will.
But you know it was an accident. You. You can help me get away. Your boat.
My boat to get away? I'd scuttle her first.
Markham, I'll give you anything. Money.
Get it through your head, Owen. You killed one of the finest men that ever drew a breath.
But it wasn't my fault. It was the curse. Please, Markham. We're friends.
You don't have any friends. Not now. Except maybe Selena.
Selena. Yes, Selena. She could hide me in the jungle.
Aye, for the rest of your life. All right, Owen, go to her. She'll take you. I'll let you go. It'll be a worse punishment than hanging.
I was lost. One moment I was a man with friends, a sweetheart, a future, a man who couldn't lose. But now I was alone in a world of hate, with nothing to hope for, not even my life, unless... Yes. I turned and I saw her, Selena. She was standing at the edge of the jungle, smiling, evil. She was waiting for me.
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you The Running Man by Herb Purdom, starring Vic Perrin. Featured in the cast were Michael Ann Barrett and Gene Bates, with Ralph Moody, Don Diamond, Barney Phillips, and Byron Kane. Editorial supervision is by John Meston. And the special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Lee Stevens. Next week.
Presenting the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon. Last week, Flash Gordon defended the Witch Queen Azura from the attack of the Death Dwarf. Tall, having proclaimed himself King of Blue Magic Land, offered Khan the Hawkman the command of the army if he would swear allegiance to him. Khan refused. Unable to find the hill with the iron door through which Flash and Azura had disappeared, Zarkoff returned to Dale. She suggested that they free Khan and let him direct them to the hill. When Dale and Zarkoff reached the iron door in the hill and opened it, they found Azura in Flash Gordon's arms. Zarkoff hurried them out of the tunnel, killed the dwarf. Then he took Azura prisoner. Now we continue the story. When Zarkoff opened the iron door, Dale Arden saw Queen Azura in Flash Gordon's arms and he was kissing her. Dale's love was turned to jealousy. Ignoring Azura, Flash tries to explain the situation to Dale.
You don't understand, Dale.
I understand perfectly. Actions speak louder than words, and your actions barely showed it.
It was Azura's last wish.
I wish it had been. How like a coward that explanation of yours is, throwing the blame on the woman, hiding behind her skirt. I mean her cloak.
I'm not hiding behind anything. I'm telling you the truth. My spear had just broken. We thought we were about to die.
Don't touch me. And that's the way you wanted to die? Kissing the Queen of Witches?
Please listen to me, Dale. I told Azura that I loved you and you only.
Did you expect that to make any difference to her?
Dale, darling, you know I love you.
It looked like it when Zarkoff opened the door.
I've always loved you, Dale. And I always will.
Love? You don't know what love means, Flash Gordon. It's Azura you love.
No, no. Listen to me, Dale.
I hate you. Let me go.
Never. Not until I make you realize I'm telling you the truth. Dale, I fell in love with you when I first glanced at you over the top of my newspaper in that transcontinental plane, just before we bailed out. I knew from that moment that you were the one girl in the world for me.
In the world? But not Mongo.
Yes, in Mongo or any other world we may come across. It was for you I returned to Azura's palace and kidnapped her.
What?
So that by holding her as hostage, I could subdue her kingdom for you.
For me?
Yes. I intended to turn it over to you to rule.
How nice. And what did you intend to do with Azura? Keep her as a souvenir for yourself?
Don't be like that, Dale.
Don't be like that. Why not? All the time you were missing, I was so worried I couldn't sleep. Wondering where you were, What had happened to you? Zarkov and I searched for you, risked our lives for you. And what were you doing? Making love to that witch?
No, you're wrong, Dale. I tell you, I didn't make love to Azora.
You were giving an excellent imitation of it. If you weren't making love to her, what do you call holding her in your arms and kissing her?
The only reason I kissed her was because she asked me to.
Oh, indeed. I suppose the only reason you've never kissed me is because I've never asked you to.
But Azora and I thought we were going to die.
But chivalry.
Dale, you've got to believe me.
Why?
Because I love you, as you love me. We mustn't let a little thing like this come between us.
Azora isn't so little. And what's the use of thinking about it?
Evidently, there isn't any use of my thinking about it. So we'll get Azora to prove it. Azora!
Yes, lad?
Dale won't believe my explanation of what she saw. Tell her the truth.
Oh, don't be a stubborn fool, Earth girl. You know that Flash Gordon has fascinated me from the first time I laid eyes on him. I've tried every way to make him fall in love with me and forget you.
Yes, I know that.
The only time I had any success was when I kept him drugged with lithium. Back there in the tunnel, as he fought with the Death Dwarf, Flash declared his love for you. He said he loved you only, and he always would.
He said that?
Yes, and when his spear broke and it looked as though we were doomed, I asked him to kiss me goodbye. At that moment, you opened the iron door.
Well, Dale, do you believe me now?
I've believed you all the time, Flash.
What?
Certainly. But I couldn't let you know too soon, could I?
Of course she couldn't. That is right, Dale. Keep him guessing.
And I thought... Well, what does it matter what I thought? I was wrong.
Now that we have that little matter taken care of, we must take care of our beautiful and valuable prisoner. We shall hide her away until we have Tal and his army willing to listen to terms.
Meanwhile, Tal inspects the fortifications of his newly acquired palace.
Roar, let down the drawbridge. Yes, it worked very smoothly. See that it is kept in the same good condition. Come, Roar, we will have a look at the sentry gate.
Yes, Your Majesty.
The moat looks dry. See that more water is let in. Keep the level up to that iron hook.
Yes, Your Majesty.
What is that, Roar?
They call for the changing of the guard, Your Majesty.
Good. Let us wait and see how well they do it. Halt! Halt, guard. What are the orders for this post?
Stand guard constantly. Face the distance between the arch of the gate, pivoting always with the face turned looking outward. At any unusual sight, notify by bugle the commandant of the guard. Challenge all who draw near. If challenge is unheeded, start firing.
Very good. Relieve guard. Fall in. Forward. March. Yes. Very satisfactory. Very. Come, Roar. We'll go back and see that the guns are in order.
Yes, Your Majesty.
With my coronation ceremony at hand, I must see that nothing interferes with it. While I do not expect any treachery from within, I must take every precaution for my own safety.
Yes, Your Majesty.
You may pull up the drawbridge, Roar.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Guard, fire that ray cannon. Now the other one, at once. Yes, good. That was well done, guard, and quickly. That is the way I like to see my men work. What is that?
The alarm from the sentry gate, Your Majesty.
Let down that drawbridge. Hurry. I'll see what has happened. Sentry, what is the trouble here?
There's a man running this way from the hills, Your Majesty.
Now, give me the cytoscope. Yes, I see him. Why, it's Khan. Khan, how did he escape?
I do not know, Your Majesty.
No matter. I'll capture him again myself. Surrender! I'll cut you in pieces with my sword.
I've got the drop on you, Tal. Put up your hands.
A ray pistol. Where did you get that, Khan?
You'd like to know, wouldn't you? Well, I've got it, and that's the important thing. Get down off that horse.
What are you going to do?
As you said to me once, Tal, you'll see. You'll soon find out.
I warn you, it's useless for you to think you can escape.
My men all know you. They'll find you wherever you may go.
Will they? I'm not so sure about that. Paul, I've been waiting for this moment for a long time. You're so brave and mighty with a squad of guards at your back. How does it feel to be alone with a man who is more than a match for you?
I haven't met such a man yet.
Brave words, Tal, but it's an idle gesture. Out here, I can kill you before your soldiers can arrive.
That would do you no good. They will kill you on sight.
You think so? Are you willing to risk it?
You heard my guards acknowledge me to be their king?
I heard your guards acknowledge you as King Tal the First, not their king. A soldier obeys his superior, no matter if a superior is wrong.
I'll show you who's wrong. Put down that ray pistol.
Not until I'm ready, Tal. I have something to say to you first.
I'll say it quickly, then. My soldiers will be out here any moment, and you'll be a dead man.
Tal, when I let you put me in that cell, I thought there was nothing left to fight for.
Well,
now I find there is.
What do you mean, Con?
I mean Princess Dale. She's still alive, and I'm going to take over the blue magic land for her.
You won't live long enough.
We'll see about that, you and I.
We will?
Yes. You were willing to make me commander of your army if I would swear allegiance to you.
I see. You'll do that if I make the Earth Girl queen?
No, I'll do it if you beat me in fair fight.
You will?
Yes. But if I win, Princess Dale will rule Blue Magic Land.
And if I refuse to agree to your terms?
I'll kill you where you stand.
I agree.
Then break your sword in half, and I'll empty this ray pistol.
What is this, a trick?
No, we'll fight with bare hands. Break that sword.
Yeah, very well.
Good. Here goes the ray pistol. Now, Tal, put up your fists and defend yourself. This is a fight to the finish.
In another part of the hills, as the three fugitives, Zarkov, Flash, and Dale, trudge along with their beautiful captive Azura, looking for a suitable shelter and hideaway, Dale draws Flash to one side.
Flash?
Yes, Dale?
Are you happy?
Yes. Why do you ask, Dale?
I'm not.
Why not?
I've been doing a lot of thinking lately, in between worrying about you. In fact, it was the worrying about you that got me to thinking.
What have you been thinking about?
About the Earth. We've been up here in Mongo for... I really don't know how long. Isn't it time we were going home?
Just when we've got Azura captured and can take over the kingdom of the cave world?
Yes, right now. Let's give up this conquest business and try to find our way back to the Earth. I'm tired of risking our lives at every turn we raise.
Well, we have had some thrills, I'll admit, Dale, but that's all part of the game.
A game I don't care anything about, Flash. I'm sick of being taken prisoner and treated like a slave. I'm sick of going around in odd-looking clothes. I want to go back to the Earth. Take me back.
I can't take you back, Dale. I have no idea where the Earth is. And even if I could, it's asking a lot to give up conquering this kingdom. I've got a winning streak on. I can't break my luck.
If you keep on, you'll break your neck. Oh, Flash, darling, can't you see? This isn't going to get either of us anywhere, really. You and I are Earth people, Flash. We belong on the Earth.
You're tired, Dale. We ought to find shelter soon, and then you can rest. Why, after you've had some food and sleep, you'll laugh at such talk. Think of it. You'll be a queen.
I'd rather be a citizen back on the Earth than queen of all this funny universe.
Flash! Dale!
What is it, Zarkov?
A scout patrol. We have been sighted. They are coming down that trail ahead and will cut us off.
What did I tell you, Flash? This is the end of it.
Don't you worry, Dale. Ask that some other band of men. Azura?
Yes, Flash?
Are those men part of your army?
Yes, they are my chief scouts. Your friend Zarkov just noticed them, but I've been watching them for some time.
They have dismounted. They are advancing on foot with leveled flame guns.
Oh, we're doomed to a fiery death.
Be brave, Dale. We'll die together.
Zarkov, and the girl, and Flash Gordon, shoot them down!
All soldiers, on your knees to your queen. Captain, the Earthman has saved my life. He is henceforth your king, in fact, as well as in name. Flash Gordon and his friends are to be escorted to my palace in honor and safety.
What?
Do you hear, Flash? You are king of the cave world now.
Do you really mean it, Azura?
Yes, Flash.
Oh, now we'll never get back to the Earth.
My queen, it is my duty to warn you.
Warn me of what?
The army remains loyal to you, but in your absence, Tal has seized the throne.
So goodbye until next week at the same time, when we will be back with another chapter in the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon.
You are groping down a dark alleyway in the French Quarter of New Orleans, driven by terror, hounded by the curse of the Papaloi, a curse from which there is no escape.
Escape, produced by William N. Robeson and carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Today we escape into two worlds, one of modern jazz, the other of primitive voodoo, and to a doomed man who brought them together, as William Irish imagined it in his eerie story, Papa Benjamin.
New Orleans Police Department, 4th Precinct, Sergeant Tolliver speaking. Yeah? Yeah? Well, pick him up on a drunk 723. Right. Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Are you in charge here?
Yeah. Hey, aren't you Eddie Block, the band leader?
That's right.
Hey, Joe, look who's here, Eddie Block.
Well, never thought we'd get a visit from a big celebrity like you, Mr. Block. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I suppose, though, this is just the shank of the evening for a big-shot orchestra leader.
Oh, hell, what can we do for you, Mr. Blood?
I've just killed a man.
You're kidding.
I tell you, I've just killed a man.
I guess you've been working too hard, Mr. Block. You're imagining things.
Here, here's the gun. Look at it.
Sit down, Block. Better have a drink of water. You'll feel better.
No. I'm all right.
Sarge?
Yeah?
This gun's been used all right. Smell.
Wasn't an accident, Mr. Block?
No.
Who'd you use it on? Who was it?
I don't know his name. They call him Papa Benjamin.
Sounds like...
Yeah. A white man?
No. He was a Negro.
Well, now, in New Orleans...
No. There was nothing like that.
Well, what was he doing to you?
He was killing me.
Killing you? But how?
Look at me. I used to weigh 200 pounds. I'm down to 102.
Yeah, but how? How was he killing you?
Would you believe in anything you can't see, can't hear, can't touch?
Well...
I've been to the biggest doctors in the world. If they don't believe me, how can I expect you to? They'll simply say I'm cracked and let it go at that. I don't want to spend the rest of my life in an asylum.
Look, Mr. Black, you say he was a Negro named Papa Bench.
Yes. An old man, 80, maybe 90. Skin and bones. He could hardly walk. And I shot him.
You sure? You sure you killed him?
Yes, of course.
Where?
I don't know exactly. In a little back alley in the Vieux Carré. Near Congo Square.
Supposing you take us there. Can you do that? Then maybe we'll find out this is just a bad dream.
This is the alley. To the right, between the buildings.
All right, let's go. You pack, Sarge?
Catch cold without it.
Don't go back there, honey.
Quiet, you.
Oh, cops.
Nice neighborhood.
This is it. In that door and up the stairs.
Come on.
No. Don't make me go up there again, please.
You better come, Mr. Block. You're showing us.
Yeah, flash your light. Somebody here on the stairs.
He won't bother us. Dead drunk. Now step over him and let's go. This ain't the most pleasant neighborhood to come calling on.
This it?
Yes. In that door.
Come on.
Better call the commissioner. Mr. Block wasn't kidding. This man's dead.
But why? Why?
Because he was killing me, Commissioner.
Then it was self-defense.
He never came near me once. I was the one who went to him. I offered him $3,000, $10,000, any amount, and he refused. I offered him my gun and asked him to shoot me with it to get it over with quickly and not to drag it out any longer.
Then when he said no, you shot him?
Yeah. So you can lock me up now.
Mr. Block, do you think we want to hang a murder rap on you, one of the most popular celebrities in the United States? Use your head. I'm trying to find an out for you.
He was killing me.
Look, an 80-year-old colored man who's so feeble he can't even go upstairs by himself, who has to have his food pulled up to him in a basket, is killing who? A stumble bum his own age? No. Mr. Eddie Block, the top band leader of America, who can name his own price anywhere, who has about everything a man can want. Tell me just one thing, Mr. Block. How was he killing you?
By thinking thought waves of death that reached me through the air.
Now, Mr. Block, you surely don't...
You want to hush the whole thing up, don't you?
No, Mr. Block, no. But I'm going to get the whole story. So you might as well start telling me from the beginning.
All right. It began one night about 2 years ago. We were playing at Maxim's on Charles Street. We were just another band. Small Dixieland outfit then. Eddie Block and his chips. Judy Jarvis, my wife, did the vocals. But we weren't setting the world on fire. Business was so bad, I know what to expect when I got a call from the manager one night after closing time.
Come in. Oh, hi, Eddie.
I thought we'd better have a little talk.
It's that bad, huh?
I took in $4,500 this week.
I see. And you can cancel my contract anytime it falls under $5,000. I get it.
Eddie, they can get the same liquor and sandwiches anywhere, but they'll go where the band has something. Tonight there were more waiters in the place than there were customers. Judy didn't even get a hand.
It's not her fault,
I know
Graham.
It's not her fault. She's okay. But I'm asking you, what's wrong?
I don't know. I'm getting the latest arrangement sent to me from New York. We sweat our heads bald off rehearsing.
Well, this is New Orleans, practically the cradle of jazz. You gotta give them something new.
Yeah, I know, I know. When do I leave?
Finish the week out, see if you can do something about it by Monday. If not, I'll have to wire St. Louis to get Kruger's band. I'm sorry, Eddie, but...
It's all right. It's okay. You're not running a charity bazaar. But I didn't feel so cocky about it. It looked like we were on the skids. The band just didn't seem to have it. And I wasn't good enough to figure out why and pull him out of it. I was feeling pretty low when I went back to the deserted bandstand to pick up some music. The place was dark and empty, except for a couple of scrub women cleaning up. A dark nightclub can be an eerie place sometimes. I got that feeling just before I saw it. I saw it lying there on the floor between the stands. It was a severed chicken claw with a red ribbon tied around it. I almost laughed. How did that thing get there? Then I picked it up and tossed it out on the floor where the scrub women were cleaning up. I certainly wasn't expecting the reaction I got. They took one look. They turned and ran out. I just recovered from that surprise and was bending down to pick up some music that had slipped to the floor when I heard someone come in. I guess I was pretty well hidden from view. Anyway, he didn't see me. It was Johnny Statz, my drummer. He was acting funny, looking intently at the floor, searching for something. Suddenly, he spotted this chicken claw on the floor and grabbed it up with a terrific sigh of relief, stuffed it into his pocket, and walked out. What I did then, I did on a strange impulse, and it changed the whole course of my life. I followed Johnny Statz. I suppose I just meant to catch up with him and have a cup of coffee with him somewhere and ask him about the chicken claw. But as I followed him farther and farther down into the Vieux Carré, down to Congo Square, it was a growing curiosity that kept me on his trail. When he turned into that dark alleyway, I stopped and debated. I felt like an eavesdropper, and yet something drew me on. And I walked up that dark alley. I passed that one lighted window.
I told you before, don't go back there, honey.
But I went on, through a sort of tunnel into another alleyway. Then I stopped. Ahead of me, Johnny Statt stood before a dark, dismal-looking old wreck of a building. Suddenly he whistled. A gigantic man appeared from out of the shadows. Johnny handed him the chicken claw, and he was motioned into the building. And then I heard sounds coming from the upstairs of that building. A throbbing drum, a wailing, an unearthly sound, and yet wonderful. An exotic, fascinating rhythm. This was music, something new, something sensational. Something that would set New Orleans on its ear and put Eddie Block in the big time. I had to get in there and hear it. I was mighty busy for the next 5 minutes. I ran back down the alley, overturning 5 or 6 garbage cans before I found what I needed. Then back to that lighted window in the alley and a 5 spot in exchange for a red ribbon. Then I was back at the dark building, walking up to that menacing shadow.
Blood up. Let me see your face.
Okay, okay. Easy with that knife. My ribs are tender.
Your face never been here before.
My friend Johnny Statt's up there. He'll tell you.
Mr. Johnny, your friend, he asked you to come here?
This chicken claw told me to come.
Papa Benjamin sent you that?
Certainly. You'll make me late. Papa Benjamin wouldn't like that.
All right, go along here. First thing you know, all New Orleans is going to be coming around.
I groped up the stairs, half expecting to feel his knife in my back. But I got to the top safely. Cautiously, I opened the door and slipped in. The room was full of people. They were in such a state of frenzy, I wasn't even noticed. I slipped into a corner and slid down by the wall, sitting on the floor. It was a sight I'll never forget. Wild, fantastic, hideous, revolting, fascinating. In the center of the room was an incredibly old man, naked to the waist, wearing a hideous mask and holding a live chicken. There was wild gestures, weird incantations, frantic dancing, shouting and rolling of eyes, and there was blood. And always there was the chant. Nobody noticed me. After a moment, I took a piece of copy paper out of my pocket and began putting down the notes. It was wonderful, fantastic, and wonderful. In 10 minutes, I had it, and I'd seen enough. Enough for a lifetime of nightmares. I began to feel sick and I wanted to get out. I started to stand up. Suddenly, the room went dead.
Stranger is here.
His bony arm stretched out straight from the shoulder, pointing at me like an arrow. And there was blood on it.
What you do here?
Papa Loy. I know this man. Let me find out.
No one moved. There was no sound in the room as Johnny Statz came over and squatted beside me.
You're in terrible trouble, Eddie. I don't know if I can get you out of it.
What is this, Statson? What are you doing here?
There's no time to talk now. You've got to do something quicker. You'll be a dead man.
Why? I'm in the very heart of New Orleans. They wouldn't dare.
Listen, you've seen enough tonight. You know better. Eddie, there's only one way.
What?
Join. Become one of us.
Oh, no.
It's the only way, Eddie. I can't save you. And you'd better hurry up. Unless you do, you'll never get out of here alive. You know what this is, don't you? This is voodoo.
Okay, sure. I'll join up. Why not?
Oh, wait a minute, Eddie. There's a lot more to it than you think. Unless you're serious, it'd be better to get cut to pieces right now.
Don't worry, I'm serious.
All right.
Papa Loy, his spirit wishes to join our spirits.
The old man burned some feathers while the others watched silently. Then he nodded.
Came out all right. He reads them. The spirits are willing.
There were other things. Rituals, ceremonies, another sacrifice. Then, after the chanting started again, they brought me the sacrificial bowl. I didn't have to be told what was in it. I started to draw back.
Drink, Eddie, drink, or they'll kill you on the spot.
Late next morning, the band assembled at Maxim's for a rehearsal. When Johnny Statz got there, he found another drummer sitting in his place. Naturally, he came to me.
Hey, what's all this about, Eddie?
I don't want any voodoo lover in my band, that's all. Statz, here's a check for 2 weeks' salary.
So you're crossing him, are you? Brother, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes for all the gold in Fort Knox.
Hell, if you mean that bad dream last night, and I haven't told anybody, and I won't, I'd be laughed at. I'm only remembering what I can use of it. The jungle is just trees to me, the Congo a river, and nighttime just a time for electric lights.
Yeah, but this new number you're going to rehearse this morning.
I said I'd remember what I can use.
Listen, Eddie, that chant is sacred. Secret.
It was secret.
Eddie, don't do it.
Look, here's a couple of C notes. Hand them these. That ought to pay my dues up from now to doomsday, and I don't want a receipt. And if they try putting poison in my orange juice, they'll end up in a chain
gang. It's not that easy, Eddie. You're one of us now.
Oh, get out.
Okay. Goodbye, dead man.
Graham, the manager of the club, changed his mind about canceling our contract when he heard us rehearse the chant. Instead, he spent 5 G's in publicity, and Saturday night was set for the big unveiling. It seemed like all New Orleans tried to jam into Maxim's. Came to hear the voodoo chant, the real thing. Just before we were ready to hit it, Judy came up to me.
Eddie, listen, let's not do it.
What do you mean, baby, not do it? Well, this is it. This is our ticket to the big time. It'll be a sensation.
I know, but I got a funny feeling, Eddie. And look, I found this under your dressing room door just a little while ago. It sounds like a warning. Somebody doesn't want you to play that number.
I see. You can summon the spirits, but can you dismiss them again? Think well. Oh, forget it, baby. Statz is trying to scare me because I fired him.
Ladies and gentlemen.
All right, come on, let's go. They're waiting.
Maxim takes great pleasure in bringing you a historic moment in musical history. You're about to hear for the first time anywhere the voodoo chant, the age-old ceremonial rhythm no one but the initiated has ever heard before. This is the real thing, ladies and gentlemen, an accurate transcription. Not a note has been changed. So now, Eddie Block and his chips present for the first time anywhere the voodoo chant.
Sensation. They went crazy for it. They screamed for more, but we were playing it cagey. Once a night, that'd pack them in. After it was over, I went back to our dressing room. Judy got there before me. She was reading a newspaper somebody had brought in.
Eddie, listen.
Oh, baby, you were wonderful. We wowed him. We're in the money now.
Yeah, Eddie, but...
Boy, am I tired. I feel more tired than I've ever felt in my life. Nervous strain, I guess, huh? Let down?
Eddie, look. Here in the paper.
Oh, who cares about the paper now?
Eddie. It's Johnny Statz.
Hmm?
He's dead. He drowned himself in Lake Pontchartrain train this afternoon.
Hey, this afternoon? Well, then that note, it wasn't Johnny.
Oh, Eddie, look, you can't blame yourself.
Me? Oh, no, of course not, but I think I know who to blame.
What do you mean?
Nothing.
Eddie, why don't you lie down and rest for a few minutes? You look worn out.
Yes, I am. I feel dead.
Here. Let me take off your coat.
Oh, be careful.
What's the matter?
I don't know. A funny thing. While I was waving the baton on the chant, I felt something, a sharp pain there in my back, like a pin or something stuck me.
I don't feel anything there now. Maybe it slipped down.
I don't know.
Couldn't have been much. There. Now, you just lie down. You'll feel better in a few minutes. You've been working too hard, Eddie. You should relax now and maybe take a few days off. Hey, Eddie, look here. Where'd this come from?
What?
It's a little doll. It was lying on the dressing table. Why, Eddie, it looks just like you.
Let me sing.
Now, that's funny. Look, there in the back. There's a little pin sticking in the back.
Yes. That's right where I felt the pain. That started. Next day, I had a backache. Later, there was a numbness that spread to my shoulders, arms, and legs. I felt tired all the time, listless, dead. I began to lose weight. I couldn't get Johnny Stats out of my mind. He'd introduced me to them, vouched for me, and he'd committed suicide. He knew. He hadn't waited. I decided to get out of New Orleans. I went to New York, playing the chant, of course. I had to. It was my biggest asset now. But nothing changed. I was losing weight, from a husky 200 down to 160, and I couldn't sleep. Maybe if I put an ocean between. I took an offer in London, toured the continent, away a year. I was an international hit now, the biggest attraction in music. But I was down to 110, dying on my feet. The doctors couldn't figure it out. Reynolds in London told me.
You're as normal, Mr. Block, as anyone I ever examined. You're so well balanced that you haven't even got that extra little touch of imagination most actors and musicians have.
I guess that's true, Doctor. I'm just mediocre. And yet you might say my success is killing me. And so, after 2 years, I finally realized it was no use. I came back to New Orleans, back to the dark alleyway down near Congo Square. I could just barely drag myself along, but I had to see Papa Benjamin. I slowly climbed the stairs up to that loathsome door and went in. There he was, Papa Benjamin, staring at me from the bed as if he'd been expecting me. And then he started to laugh. Take that curse off me. Give me my life back. I'll do anything you say.
What has been done cannot be undone. You think the spirits of earth, air, fire, water know what forgiveness means?
Intercede for me, then. You brought it about. Here's money. I'll give you twice as much. All I earn, all I ever hope to earn.
You have fouled the Obeah. Death has been on you from that night. All over the world and in the air above, you have mocked the spirits with the chant that summons them.
And please, here's a gun. Kill me now and be done with it. I can't stand anymore. All you have to do is shoot. I'll write a note, sign it, say I did it myself.
Death will come, but different. Slow. Oh, slow.
No. I can't stand that. I won't. Maybe if I kill you, maybe then the spell will be broken.
No.
That's it. Kill you.
No.
And that's all, Commissioner. Then I came here, the police station. You know the rest. Well?
All right, Mr. Block.
You don't believe me, do you?
Yes, I believe you. Not about the curse, of course. That was your own mind. They planted the suggestion in your mind, and you did the rest. But it's plain that you killed in self-defense. Crazy kind of self-defense, but I think we can manage it. We'll try. Thank you.
The commissioner managed it all right. How is almost a story in itself. Our detective with a moulage false face posed as Papa Benjamin and called the voodoo clan together and into a trap. How they collected the evidence that proved my story. And how they sent most of that voodoo bunch to jail. My name wasn't even connected with the case. So now I'm free. I'm living again. I've gained weight, the tiredness, the numbness is gone. I took a nice vacation, went to Bermuda, relaxed and had fun. Now I'm back in New Orleans at Maxim's, and the whole thing is forgotten. We're opening tonight and the place is packed. Everybody's come to hear the chant. Eddie Block and the chant. We're on our way now, and nothing can stop us.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome back on his triumphal return, Eddie Block and his chips, playing for you the one and only Voodoo Chant.
Look at them, Judy. They're eating it up.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
I was hoping I'd never hear this thing again.
What do you mean? It's your trademark, yours and Eddie's.
I tried to persuade him not to do it. He wouldn't listen.
Why? You aren't imagining all that voodoo stuff.
I don't know. It was all in his mind and it nearly killed him. I don't think you can put it out of your mind and forget so easy. When Eddie plays it again...
Oh, nonsense.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Look at Eddie. There's something wrong.
What? Well, he's staggering.
Eddie!
Somebody better get a doctor.
Eddie!
Judy, wait. Now, let me pick him up. He's probably just fainted from the...
No! No, leave him alone. He's dead. I guess Papa Benjamin won after all.
Escape. Produced by William N. Robeson and directed by Norman McDonnell. Today brought you Papa Benjamin by William Irish. Adapted for radio by John Dunkel, with Frank Lovejoy as Eddie Block, Louis Van Ruten as Papa Benjamin, Harry Bartell as the police commissioner, and Joan Banks as Judy. Music was conducted by Eddie Dunstetter. Now, from the makers of Cold Water Omo,
the ugly old kitchen clock looked down on the scullery of the house. The room had seen better days. Days when it had been filled with sounds of servants' chatter, the clatter of cooking utensils and trays piled with crockery, the smells of good food, and the heat of the coal stoves and steam boilers. Now it was different. Electrical appliances had replaced the old-fashioned methods, but the room was still dominated by a large, scrubbed wooden table. A shadow fell across it. The shadow of a man. He held a candlestick in one hand, and by the flickering light he gazed at the glossy cover of a magazine. He placed the candle on the table and opened the magazine.
Yes, it's here somewhere.
The man stopped at an article in the magazine and read,
"Better bridge with applied mathematics by Mrs. Emma Peel."
There, sure enough, was a photograph of Mrs. Peel. A very lush, full-page color reproduction. It was an attractive pose, and from the dimpled smile and twinkling eyes, it was clear that Mrs. Peel knew quite a lot more about life than how to play bridge. The man's hands lingered over the page, stroking the glossy surface of Mrs. Peel's face. Then he ripped the page from the magazine and with a pair of kitchen scissors began to cut the picture into small pieces. When the page lay in fragments on the table, the large, hairy hands reached out and began to reassemble the picture. He chuckled as he worked. Twisting the features, rearranging them, an eye appeared in the center of the forehead, an ear sat on one cheek, and a hank of hair grew from the pink lips. It became a monstrous, sinister, obscene jigsaw. The owner of the hairy hands clenched them until the gnarled knuckles turned white. His laughter grew wilder. He seized a kitchen knife and hacked at the pieces in a frenzy of madness. Someone doesn't like you, Mrs. Peel.
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 1 of this story, in which John Steed is forced to sit out the first round of the game, and Emma Peel suspects that somewhere in the background lurks a joker. On a rather misty morning, Emma Peel drove carefully across London to John Steed's Mews apartment. She was dressed in a warm, dark red trouser suit with a gay scarf at the neck. She looked very like the recent photographs of herself that appeared in the glossy magazines. She was in a carefree mood and hummed quite cheerfully as she parked the car outside Steed's home. A few moments later, John Steed, who was upstairs, heard the front doorbell ring.
Coming!
Steed made his way downstairs quite quickly. Too quickly, perhaps. Halfway down the stairs, Steed tripped, lost his balance and fell heavily, dragging a few ornaments with him. He landed painfully on one ankle. It promptly gave way. Mrs. Peel, hearing the crash, tried the door. It opened.
Steed? Steed, what's happened?
Mrs. Peel, you are needed.
What on earth have you done?
Came downstairs to answer the door. Forgot it wasn't locked. I fell. Hurt my ankle.
Well, let's have a look. Ooh, nasty.
Yeah, painful, too.
Come on, let's get you up into a chair.
Bath?
Well, you look clean enough. Oh, I see what you mean. Well, I don't know about a wheelchair, but you must certainly keep off that leg for a while. There. Better?
Thanks.
Lucky you didn't break it. As it is, your tango may be irreparably damaged.
Tango? I'm not as old hat as all that. I'm getting with it.
Well, it's obvious that you got as far as the twist. This ankle's very badly sprained. What do we do about it? Get a doctor?
No, get a drink. Over there, three fingers of scotch.
Right.
What brought you here this misty morning?
Well, I was going to ask you to drive me down to Exmoor. Here, that should kill the pain a bit.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers. I suppose I shall have to take myself down then, huh?
Exmoor? Who the devil is in Exmoor?
Sir Cavalier Rousicana.
He sounds like an opera.
He's probably the greatest bridge player in Europe. He read my article that appeared in a magazine lately. Anyway, he wants to meet me.
Oh?
He's invited me down to his house for the weekend.
Oh.
Sir Cavalier is 75.
Oh. Just the same, be careful. You know what a rejuvenating effect you have on people. I mean, look at me. I feel better already. Hardly any pain in the leg at all. Well, Oh, must not.
It's quite a privilege to meet Sir Cavalier. He hardly ever sees anyone.
Well, I could have a very small fan mail. Well, if you're dead set on this jaunt, I suppose you better get going. Well, don't let me delay you.
I'm sure you'll be all right.
Quite sure. Now, you run along and enjoy yourself. I only wish I was coming with you, but... Oh, well, it was not to be, thanks to those blasted stairs. Bye, Mrs. Peel.
Goodbye, Steve.
Mrs. Peel left. A short while later, she was driving through the cold English countryside, her scarf catching the breeze, a smile on her face. Could it be that she rather liked going without John Steed? Careful, Mrs. Peel, you may regret this newfound freedom. As for Steed, back in his apartment, he hobbled painfully across the room to the cigar humidor. He selected one, poured himself another brandy, lit the cigar, and was about to enjoy both when the doorbell rang again. Steed limped across the room, down the small passage, and opened the door.
George. George Fancy.
Hello, Steed.
Oh, come in, come in. Nice to see you. Go ahead, I'll have to hobble up from behind.
Oh, what happened? You run into counter-espionage, tangle with the minions of a mastermind?
Oh, something far more sinister. I fell down the stairs.
My word, you weren't...
Certainly not. But speaking of a drink, would you like one?
Well, thanks, yes, just one.
You wouldn't like to help yourself, would you? Just poured myself one.
Yes, of course. I hope it's not inconvenient calling like this.
Well, it's a pleasure. As you see, I'm confined to barracks at the moment.
Yes. Well, actually, I only called to warn you. Cheers.
Cheers. Warn me of what?
Remember Max Prendergast?
Remember? Impossible to forget him.
He's out.
Out? A prison?
Broke jail 2 days ago.
2 days ago?
The French authorities didn't think to tell us until they realize he's heading this way. Steed? We're pretty sure he's here, in London.
Max Prendergast.
You know the kind of man he is? That mad, warped sense of humor?
Oh, yes, I know. Of all people, I know.
Steed, will you tell Mrs. Peel?
Mrs. Peel?
Well, she was more involved with Prendergast than anyone. She ought to be warned, don't you think?
Yes. Yes, I do. I'll tell her on Monday. She'll be tucked away quite safely in the country for the next couple of days. I'll tell her on Monday. No point in spoiling her weekend. Max Prendergast, eh? I don't like the idea of him on the loose, not one little bit.
Mrs. Peel had had quite a tiring drive. Her good spirits had begun to wilt as the mist turned into fog. She lost her way a couple of times down the country lanes and was quite relieved when at last she found a sign pointing off the road which read, Rousicana Hall. She turned up the drive, and minutes later parked the car. The house looked impressive, what she could see of it. She ran up the steps, carrying her weekend case, and rang the doorbell. While she waited, she glanced around, peering out into the fog. She was quite unaware that in the laurel bushes, not more than a few yards away, a man was peering back at her. Two large, hairy hands parted the branches, and then the door opened.
Good afternoon. I'm Emma Peel.
Hello.
Sir Cavalier is expecting me.
Yes, he told me. Do come in. That's if you want to.
Well, that was the idea of coming down here. And with this fog.
I love fog. They're cozy. This way.
The interior of the house was dim and shadowy. Heavy antique furniture filled the hall and the main rooms. The strange young lady led Mrs. Peel into a slightly more cheerful-looking drawing room and closed the door.
My name's Ula. Ula Monsey Chamberlain. Isn't it a shriek? Monsey was a pirate. I was lying on the bed when you rang the bell.
Oh, sorry. I'm a bit late, I'm afraid. Got lost a couple of times.
Oh, I'm not surprised. This place is the end of the world, isn't it? I'm not surprised you got lost. I like your coat.
Thank you.
I was reading an Italian book. I don't understand Italian, but I love reading it aloud. The words sound so nice. They roll off the tongue. Do you play bridge?
Yes.
I hate bridge. You're not a dentist, are you?
No, why?
Well, I have two fillings. It needs seeing to.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't be of any help to you, Miss Chamberlain. Don't you think you should tell Sir Cavalier that I'm here?
Oh, my goodness, didn't I mention it? He isn't here. He was called away this morning, a meeting in town. The IBPC, the,
International Bridge Players Convention.
Yes.
I see. When will he be back?
Sometime tonight, I think. Oh, he apologized. Would you like to see your room now? I hope you like the old homestead.
Well, it's very impressive.
You are being kind. It's sinister and old and filled with dead things. Yes, the dead could live here very easily. An ideal place for a murder, I always think. I'm sure you'll agree before you've been here for long. This way.
Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omo.
Have a good evening, and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian Serafic Panopoli and Stevie Farnaby.